Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest segment of society. To those of you who know that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that they take you away from God and create a dependency on that which is not reliable. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, toll free, 877-376-45. Excuse me. The news reads, Dateline London. The struggle among European leaders to develop a coherent response to the spiraling migrant crisis intensified on Thursday as fresh calls for a block-wide plan were met with recriminations about the continent being swamped by Muslims. Kirk, this is an extraordinarily revealing look at the world as it will soon be. As I was dealing with this news this morning, and I've been dealing with it over the last couple of weeks, it struck me that this is the explanation. We know that Europe and the United States, based upon prophecy, become resolutely anti-Semitic. We know that the world turns on Israel, and that nation after nation blockades the Israel and starves it, forces it, isolates it, to the point that Jews have to return to Israel and that they have to give up Judea and Samaria, the West Bank, in addition to having given up Gaza. I wondered how that would be possible in a Europe that is claims to be tolerant today and a United States that at least its rhetoric is pro-Israel. How do we get there over the next 10 or 11 years?
Period. Yeah, such a short period. Well, here it is.
Well, there's the answer. I don't want to tread lightly here. This was the profound piece that was missing, as to how countries in Europe and the United States turn so resiliently and radically anti-Israel and anti-Jew, so that they would, you know, Kirk, I have said for a long time that the only solution to Islam is to quarantine it. If you don't quarantine it, it's like an outbreak of Ebola, and everything it touches will be destroyed. Europe is, with this migration crisis, has just opened the doors to its own funeral. So, what is interesting is that the world's not going to quarantine Islam. It's bringing this most deadly and destructive of all human pathogens right into its home. But it is going to quarantine Israel.
Yeah, it's the only option. They're going to try to appease these people, and they're not going
That's
to
right.
either. But
yeah. Have you looked at any of the pictures of the migrants? When I put that in air quotes.
Believe it or not, the refugees, I did.
Okay. You know what's interesting when you look at them? Are the women leading the Islam that is tormenting them, or are they wearing Islamic headgear?
All the garb is brought with them.
They brought it with them.
And the attitude.
Right. And the attitude, by the way. They're fighting each other. They're fighting everybody else. They're demanding. They're belligerent. And by the way, what do you think, as you look at them, what is the average age of the men who are accompanying these women and children?
I doubt that many are over 35. They're mostly, everything I saw were mostly young people.
Yeah, it looked to me like the average age was between 15 and 35, with the core being right around 20.
Mm-hmm.
What is the most common denominator from an age point of view? What's the average or median age of an Islamic jihadist?
Oh, they have to be in their 20s, don't they?
Yeah, 15 to...
May not even be that high.
15 to 35, man. Average age is probably right around 20 to 25.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You know, I read a bunch of articles this morning where it said, oh, you don't have to worry about importing, you know, Islamic extremists. They wouldn't use Islamic extremists. You don't have to worry about bringing in the terrorists, like, and they wouldn't use the Islamic State, ISIS. Because these people are fleeing that. This is what they're rejecting. This is what they're fleeing. Their ideology is the opposite of ISIS. Bullcrap.
No, they're just fighting over whose territory, who's going to control the territory.
That is correct. They were happy to be fundamentalist Muslims before the Islamic State whooped them. And the fight here is that Sunnis in Syria are getting clobbered by the Sunnis. So the Shias are the ones who are leaving, but it's the Shias that were the most belligerent in Iran and in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're not leaving Islam. They're bringing that pathogen right into Europe. And by the way, you know, all the rhetoric is, oh, the United States is not doing its part, because back in 2013, the United States only brought in 39 Syrian refugees.
That's a lie. Let me tell you why. If you study a little bit, and which Tara and I have been doing a little bit last week, we have a refugee, quote-unquote, policy.
Mm-hmm.
In this area alone, there's 2,400 Muslims that were brought in. Under the guise of refugee. They don't come as immigrants. They don't come as illegal immigrants. They come under the heading of refugee.
Right, with American citizenship immediately. And by the way, they're using 2013 before there was the refugee problem in Syria. By the way, the numbers are about 8 million. That's how many. That's how big the number of refugees as a result of Syria and Iraq and Lebanon and Jordan and the like is 8 million. So this is a big problem.
As somebody that lives in Minneapolis, where we have the second largest population of Somalians outside of Somalia, I can tell you that is not they are not telling the truth there.
Yeah, let me tell you something. With the United States, there's two things. One is that the number is from 2013, and the Department of Homeland Insecurity is not revealing the numbers for 2014 or 2015, and 2015 will be in the tens of thousands, but from Syria alone. But the United States has brought in hundreds of thousands of Somalis. I mean, you can't find an Islamic country more terrorized by fundamental Islam than Somalia. Hundreds of thousands. And we've brought in hundreds of thousands between, you know, Somalia and Libya and Yemen and the Sudan, and it just goes on and on. We are doing the same thing, it's just that they're not all Syrians. And we're of course, absolutely petrified of the Syrians, because we're opposed to both sides. We're opposed to the Shia and the Assad regime, and we're opposed to the Sunni and the Islamic State. We're the enemy of both sides. So we're just petrified of what to do there. So here we are. You wanted the explanation as to how the world could change so radically that rather than quarantining the most deadly and destructive pathogen that has ever infected humankind, Islam, Europe and the United States are bringing Muslims by the hundreds of thousands, and it'll soon be millions, into affect their countries. And at the same time, these Muslims, because they are fundamentalists, these are young, practicing Muslims. And Islam is a criminal enterprise. It is a declaration of war on all humankind. It is a terrorist manifesto. Those are not my opinions. They are absolute, irrefutable facts. The only way that anyone can deny them is to be wholly and completely ignorant. You know, it's the opposite of what most people would say. You know, you're an ignorant redneck if you're hateful of a religion that's not your own. Well, I don't have any religion that's my own. But the fact of the matter is, the opposite in this case. Everything about Islam is rotten to the core. Muhammad was a terrorist. He was a pedophile. He was a rapist. He was a slave trader. It's not that you have to take the worst of Islam out of context to misrepresent the religion. It's that there's almost nothing left of the religion once you deal with the verses that are immoral and violent and destructive.
Yes, it's their Quran. I mean, they wrote it. I mean, they wrote it together, put it all together. We didn't make it up.
And it begins in the Islamic era with the first act of the Islamic era, which was the raid on the caravan in the valley of Batar. And there, Muhammad is acknowledged as a robber thief. And he was murderous. And that's where Louis Farrakhan's line the other day that persecution is worse than slaughter. Muhammad wanted his God to justify his slaughter of the civilian businessmen. And so he claimed falsely that they had persecuted him, which isn't true. They mocked him. They laughed at him, as anybody who is sane and informed would do. Muhammad is a despicable individual. And so those who knew him best, better than anyone alive today, mocked him. They didn't persecute the first Muslims. They just mocked Muhammad. He was a joke. He was perverted. And so they mocked him, and so he said, oh, well, mocking persecution in his case, from his warped view, is worse than slaughter. So it was what they did to me by mocking me was far worse than me butchering them, committing an act of mass murder and robbery, torture. Louis Farrakhan quoted the passage right out of the 8th Surah of the Quran. These Muslims are bringing the Quran with them.
Think of how stupid that is. You called me on my BS.
Yes.
Now I'm going to get you back.
And I'm justified because you telling correctly, acknowledging that I'm full of crap, is so bad that it justifies me not only killing you, but killing everyone associated with you, killing your family. And we're back to rendering or offing the Kirkster. Oh, no. Yeah, talk about stupid. And in Europe, they're inviting this poison into the continent, just as we have in the United States. It's going to fundamentally change the world as we know it. Specifically spoke about the issues associated with immigrants into America, the Muslims. And what it said was that any open and complete, fair evaluation of particularly the Somalis, which represent the majority of those that we've brought into America, would show it to be an absolute disaster. Very high crime rates, very high issues having young men leave the community and engage in Islamic terrorism. And so their view was that we have a gargantuan problem, and that if we don't very quickly recognize that and halt it, we're not only have issues there, but the majority that have come in are dependents.
Mm-hmm.
Welfare and mayhem making, they're not integrating in society, they're not working. And now, look what you've got here from a position of more, because you've got 8 million of them.
Mm-hmm.
8 million of them. You know what that's going to do to Europe and the United States? And by the way, 8 million isn't the end of it.
Oh, no, that's assuming it's stopped now.
Yeah,
and no one has a baby.
Right. And I read a bunch of articles that said, oh, by the way, this is all the West's fault for doing this because the West didn't actively seek a diplomatic solution to the Syrian crisis. Bull. Everybody that could tried to find a diplomatic solution to Assad. There was none.
Well, Obama didn't.
He wanted to blow him away.
Thanks good to Russia.
I want to tell you, this doesn't have anything to do with Assad.
No.
They're not leaving because of Assad.
They don't care. Assad's nobody now. He's in a little bitty city-state.
Oh, yeah, he's in a city-state. It's astonishing that people can't figure out what caused this problem and recognize that because the cause of this problem is yet to be resolved, and that since the West did in fact cause it, but not through a lack of diplomacy, and they said the second thing is we didn't spend enough money on humanitarian aid. So they're calling it a diplomatic and political problem, not a religious problem, when the problem is completely and totally religious. And why isn't it that these Muslims aren't fleeing to Saudi Arabia? Is there a shortage of funds in Saudi Arabia? Is there a shortage of land? Is Saudi Arabia further away than Germany from Syria and Iraq?
Why not Turkey?
You know, would they have a common religion? Actually, the problem, guess what? A huge percentage of the Muslims that are fleeing are Shia.
Yeah. Why not go back to Iraq? I mean,
Iran's not going to take them in. And so, but they're Shias. And Saudi Arabia, that's the last thing Saudi Arabia wants, is Shia Muslims. With all of the oil money that and all of the means to deal with them, the Saudis are doing squat. The Kuwaitis are doing squat. And said they're going to Europe. Europe ought to say, hey, man, it ain't our problem. We're not going to take you in. Go to Saudi Arabia. Go to Kuwait. Go to Iraq. Go to Iran if you want to get out of Syria. But don't come here. And by the way, what's going to happen? What is going to be the response to the other 8 million, soon to be 16 million, and then 24 million Muslims in the Middle East who are experiencing all of the deplorable conditions that are foisted upon Muslims worldwide? When Europe opens up its doors, establishes quotas, and lets in hundreds of thousands of Muslims, and they all go on the dole, all go on welfare systems in Germany and Austria and Hungary and England and Germany, Italy, and that all of these countries take in hundreds of thousands of them on quota, put them on the dole. What's going to happen to the Muslims that are still there? What are they going to do? Do you think they're going to say, why don't we stay here because life is really despicable and there's no hope? Maybe we'll go and partake. They open the door.
Free money.
Right. They open the door. Let's go take it. We've started a flow that can never be stopped. And you know what's going to happen next? They're talking about this from a rational point of view, saying the problem is Islam. It's going to be as impossible as talking about homosexuality. Most everyone who is given the opportunity to listen to a segment of this program or is going to cite this program is going to walk away condemning me for having come to the conclusion that the only way to successfully deal with Islam is to quarantine it,
what?
To isolate it.
Why?
Yeah. And let me explain what I think has to happen. I think that we have to stop intervening in Islamic countries. Now, I think most Americans would agree with that, and most Europeans, that we ought to stop invading and occupying and intervening in Islamic countries. Everything we're doing, we're making a bad situation worse. That's obvious. Although it's not obvious at the governmental level, the leadership level, it's obvious at the grassroots level. I would think the majority of people know this has been stupid. We ought not have invaded Iraq or Afghanistan. We ought not have bombed Libya. We should not have engaged in Somalia. That if they want to go kill themselves, they're crazy. Let them kill themselves. The second is, I think most Americans would realize it's probably a really bad idea to continue to be the arms merchant of the world and to sell weapons to both sides and to enable these maniacs to kill one another and to perpetrate such hellish conditions on one another that you create these kinds of refugee problems.
Yeah.
Now, when you go the next step, and to say you ought not do business with them, you ought not enrich them so that they can export Islam and Islamic terrorism, I think most people would then say, nah, I'm not going to go that far. But if you're doing business with them, if you're enriching them, then you're enabling them. And if you enable them, then they're going to do what resulted with OPEC. OPEC enabled Islamic terrorism. It's the fuel of Islamic terrorism. Prior to OPEC, Islamic terrorism only existed in Islamic countries. After OPEC, they had the wherewithal to export their terror to the rest of the world. The next is that Americans are of this notion that you ought to that religion is a good thing, and you ought to allow people to be religious, and that that to be opposed to a religion is hateful and inappropriate. But the fact of the matter is that it is criminal to do what Louis Farrakhan, a minister in Islam, did. To preach from the Quran, which says that slaughter is better than persecution, and that jihad is mandated, retribution is mandated on the Muslim. Jihad is mandated on the Muslim. And jihad is killing, fighting in Allah's cause, wiping out all who do not surrender to Islam. Those things are illegal. And so if you're going to say that, well, you can't deal with it because it's a religion and it has constitutional protections, are you going to go so far as to say that if a religion is criminal, if it calls for murder and rape and kidnapping and enslavement and destruction, are you going to still say, oh, yeah, absolutely, because it's all done under the name of a religion, we ought to accept it?
But think a second. If that was true, then I could become an Aztec again.
Right.
And I can slaughter children and cut open their hearts on an altar for my God.
Right.
And that's legal then.
Well, why not?
There was never that kind of understanding about freedom of religion.
Being able to do things that
there's a line drawn where you
cannot go there. For example, in Islam and Mormonism, both of them acknowledge polygamy, having more than one wife. Now, I don't know why anybody would want more than one wife, but evidently some some people do.
nothing to be gained.
No, I say one wife is great. Two wives are not so great.
Okay, so great.
Yeah, one wife is great. I don't know why anybody would want multiple wives, but they do. But do we allow more Mormons to have multiple wives in the United States legally, or do they have to? No, they have to. They're only doing so as a crime. They're committing a crime. Same thing with true with Islam. We don't allow it. So why do we allow? And by the way, we do not allow in religious practices the sadistic tormenting of animals in religion in ritual sacrifice. We do not allow it. So why would we allow Louis Farrakhan to say, in the name of Islam, citing the Quran, that he wants 10,000 Muslim men to go off and kill 10,000 whites? I mean, why do we allow that? We need to understand that Islam, first and foremost... Right. That's right. Islam, first and foremost, is a criminal enterprise. That's how it was founded. That's a statement of fact. Read the 8th surah of the Quran.
And if you think that way and you understand that it's just one mafioso boss trying to take over another mafioso boss, and they all have the same idea, once they take over, they're going to do exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
You understand the whole program.
Right. So what I would say to those that will take what I'm saying out of context, where I say that Islam has to be quarantined, we have to make Islam illegal in the free world, illegal in the United States, illegal in Europe, that you cannot be a practicing Muslim. It's illegal. No mosques, no Islamic literature, that Islam is declared illegal, just as we would declare the mafia illegal. That it has to be that that a gang that that makes its money on the selling of drugs and of extorting money and of and in prostitution, it ought to be viewed as illegal and prosecuted as such. And if
now
we
get rid of,
right
on that, you can get rid of the CIA too.
Yeah, of course. There you go. That's funny, but it's true. That. If we don't recognize that Islam is a criminal enterprise, a declaration of war against all mankind, and that it is a terrorist manifesto, and we're going to continue to be irrational and ignorant regarding the nature of this beast, then you're going to have the majority of people respond when I say that the only solution is to quarantine Islam, and they're going to say, you know, that's hateful and ignorant and the like. And yet, in fact, it is the most compassionate and the most enlightened thing a person can say. It's enlightened because it reflects that which is true and moral and right and evidenced. And it's compassionate in that it will diminish the kinds of things that we're seeing today. The millions of people as refugees fleeing this despicable religion.
Don't you have a right to protect your own family and people?
No. I mean, Merkel has made that clear, that those who are opposed to this disease flooding into Germany by the hundreds of thousands, no, their voice is not accepted in Germany. Their views are not accepted in Germany.
Well,
they have been slandered by Merkel and the governments of Germany and the European Union. And the European Union is right now on the cusp of establishing mandated compulsory quotas on the number of Muslims that they're going to take in. And I'm here to tell you that two things are going to happen. One of those is that you open the door, which they have done now, to tens of thousands, that the number is going to jump to hundreds of thousands and then in millions at a heartbeat. And second, that the media and politicians are going to make it as impossible to talk about the problem of Islam associated with these migrants as they do talking openly and honestly about the issues of race or of homosexuality.
And I'm confused on Germany, Merkel, because I got the understanding that they were trying to not allow them in because they're all in Budapest. I thought they were all in Budapest and they wouldn't let them through.
No. Merkel
so
wants
open arms.
No,
well,
Merkel wants. Well, I think Merkel wants 800,000 to come into Germany.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, two things are wrong with that. Number one, they obviously have a commonality. Keyword, Nazi, Jews, Holocaust, they obviously have commonality and hatred. And I that's another generation. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
Those things don't go away.
Oh, no, anti-Semitism and the neo-Nazi movements in these countries are extremely raw and growing. The whole continent is turning anti-Semitic. You know, the numbers right now in Greece and the Ukraine, two places, you know, that are morally bankrupt and financially bankrupt, is in the 85 to 90% overtly anti-Semitic. And you imagine what's going to happen when they're trying to appease these Muslims that are immigrating and that are going to become jihadists, and they're trying to appease them to keep them from being jihadist terrorists, how much they will blame Israel for inciting them and appease them.
But the German people are such hardworking people, and they're a wealthy nation that's going to bankrupt them.
But there's a problem with Germany. You know what the problem is with Germany? I mentioned this in the show, but it was just in passing.
Yeah.
Germany has the same problem right now that Japan has.
Oh, no people.
No people. Birth rates among Germans, and the birth rates, you have to have, I think just to maintain, you have to have 2.5. And their numbers are in the range of about 1.1 and 1.5 are their numbers, which means that their population of ethnic Germans and Japanese is declining. Now, the Japanese are so xenophobic, they don't want anybody in, even if it means manning the wheels of progress. But the Germans, the Germans, they love laborers. You know, the Germans, they just love
cheap labor.
Cheap labor. That's where the concentration camps was, you know, a great German invention. They love it. And so Merkel is specifically dealing with the lack of workers in Germany as a result of this. And so that's part of her mechanism, but also recognizing that these Muslims will all get citizenship in Germany. They'll all vote. And who are they going to support? The Merkels, who have said, oh, no, they're wonderful. Let them in. They're good for the country. Yeah. Just watch the videos of them. You tell me how good they are. Yes, it's going to be as difficult to talk openly, honestly, rationally about the consequence of bringing Muslims by the millions into Europe and the United States than it is to talk about homosexuality or to have an honest discussion about race and racism. It's impossible. You're just not allowed to do so in the mainstream media. And that's what Merkel is trying to impose in Europe now. And it'll be the same thing relative to Islam.
Let me say something about that. I grew up in, you know, I'm from Selma, Alabama. And I grew up, my father was not a racist. Mm-hmm. But he was the football, basketball star, but he could beat up everybody in town. And I don't say that lightly. He was tough. So him not being that, I didn't have a problem not being a racist.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you, because I live there and I also know a lot about it, when it's so pervasive that someone's against somebody,
right?
You better keep your head down a little bit because it's tough. You know, you can say what you want if you got somebody, if you're tough right. him. When you're as wimpy as me, you're going to get a lot of So, you know, you have to be, believe me, when they get that way, they'll shut everybody down. You will not be able to talk about Muslims unless you're extremely brave. It's no difference there than it was anything else.
It's life threatening.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have Yahweh, so
and,
I'm not,
yeah, and it doesn't,
so you know, keep it in context. Keep it
right.
in context. But,
right. Size, but, physical size doesn't matter.
No.
The size of one's backbone matters.
Yeah.
Their character matters. Now, the fact is that that we recognize that the next 15 years on this planet are going to be absolutely hellish.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that for absolute fact.
Yeah.
But there is a way out so that it doesn't matter. And for us, it does not matter. We're not going to be here. We'll be here until sometime till Tarua in September of 2026 in all likelihood. But after that time, when things really get bad, we're not going to be here. And for all of those who are listening who don't want to be here, who don't want to be part of it, who would like a solution, you're looking for the bright light for hope. It's found in the covenant. It's found in the Torah. Go there and you will find the path home. But for the rest, what we're seeing in this influx of Muslims into Europe and the United States and this war that we have initiated and are equipping between Sunni and Shia Muslims is the direct path to World War III. There is no end for the infighting between Shia and Sunni Muslims. It has nothing to do with Assad. It has all to do with the 1,400-year rivalry between Sunni and Shia Islam, and it's not going to go away. The Islamic State is not going to go away. Islam is not going to go away. And so they're going to expand, and the refugee problem is going to become greater, and the politics of those countries is going to fundamentally change so that the whole world is resolutely anti-Semitic, anti-Israel. And they're going to, that will be the final thing, because you have to figure out what would cause Israel to finally capitulate and make itself as vulnerable as as Neville Chamberlain made Europe when he gave Adolf Hitler the high ground of Czechoslovakia. What would cause Israel to sign its own death warrant?
Surrounded.
And it has to be that the entire world,
abandoned.
The United States and Europe, collectively, not only turn on it, but actually quarantine Israel. Stop doing business with them. Stop engaging in Israel and making being an Israeli a crime. The world is going to do exactly what needs to be done to Islam, to Israel. And this is what we're witnessing today. This is the means to that result. And Israel will sacrifice Judea and Samaria, the West Bank. And you may be listening and say, so what? What do I care? Now, the reason you ought to care,
you'll care,
is because that's the start of World War III. And through the course of World War III, do you know what percentage of the world's 7 billion population dies?
Ultimately, half.
Yeah, half. You ought to care. And you know what it says to the rest of the world? Live in absolute horror. You're bringing it on yourself. You brought the most deadly pathogen, something vastly more deadly than the bubonic plague, into your home. It's going to kill you.